Blog Talk Radio.
The following wrestling broadcast is performed by highly trained professional athletes. It is not recommended that their actions be imitated in any form whatsoever in the home. This is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour with your host, Frank Namoli, and wrestling's masked cowboy, the Maverick.
All right. It's Friday night. You know what that means. It's your daily dose of retro wrestling. That is the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour. I am your host with the most around the waist, Frank Namoli, and by my side is the ever-present and always coming in under the wire, wrestling's only masked cowboy, the Maverick.
I'm not always under the wire. Sometimes I wait till after the show starts.
It's going to be one of them nights, isn't it?
I have a very, very good reason for calling in late.
Okay, let's hear it.
I was watching Pete's Dragon.
Damn. I cannot penalize you for Pete's Dragon. Oh, and before we start the show, I have been told by Blog Talk Radio Management to stop promising that Bay Ragney will come over your house with a meatball sandwich.
He does listen to the show.
Yes, he will not come over your house with a meatball sandwich.
I'm actually a little surprised we're on the air then.
Oh, you kidding? We are probably like in the top 20 shows on the network.
How many shows are on the network? 8?
No, I think like 15 now.
Oh, wow. Well, number 20 is a good number if there's only 15.
That's what I said. We're in the mix.
You're always a contender.
All right. Well, tonight is going to be a fun show because we are probably talking about, arguably, no, you can't even argue it, one of the, if not the greatest wrestler of all time, and you know you want to do it. Go ahead.
What do I want to do? You don't know what I want to do. I don't even know what I want to do.
You want to do woo!
Not until we're after you said his name. Now you just gave spoilers away.
Well, everyone knows that the woo is followed by the Nature Boy. That's right. Tonight we are going back and looking over the career of, like I said, probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, professional wrestler of all times, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and we're going to talk about, in our humble opinion, some of his greatest feuds.
Yeah, it seems almost every week, no matter what we're talking about, there's certain names that kind of show up in the list, and Ric Flair is definitely one of them. And honestly, if any true, real wrestling historian slash aficionado slash hack radio show host like us don't include Ric Flair in one of their top three, you know, forget top five. He's got to be right in there in the mix of the greatest entertainers, performers, professional wrestlers of all time. You know, there's just no denying all he's done and his accomplishments and, you know, so many great matches, so many great feuds. And that was one of the things I was when sitting down looking at the list and trying to decide, you know, he's had some great matches with almost everybody, but how do you pick the guys that were rising to the top, the guys he really, really had amazing matches with for whatever reason? And it's an interesting list all around, I think, when you look up and down how many guys, the ones we all know, and I'm sure we're going to discuss them through the course of the program, but then there were some guys he really brought the best out of who really didn't necessarily reach the stratosphere that some of his other opponents did, but he, almost anybody he was in the ring with looked like a champion and looked like, you know, they were going to, you know, be the guy. And that's just a testament to the guy's performance level in the ring.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was going over the list, and of course, you know, you always go to the internet for some research to see what other people think. I did not like 90% of the list of what people considered his greatest feud. Because to me, I think a great feud is when you actually remember. Like, you could say, he works this guy. But how many of those matches actually do you remember? Yeah, he may have had a long-running feud. But to me, if you didn't have that wow moment and that breakout, it was just a feud. And there are some guys on my list that are probably going to surprise you, and then some that may not. But I just found it that, like, you know, I guess what people consider great and what, you know, you and I will probably consider is off because, you know, we have different criterias.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing every week when we discuss the list, looking at it in different ways and interpreting it in different ways. And, you know, when you have a performer like Ric Flair and so many memorable matches and moments and so many generations of guys, you know, one of the things looking up is how some of these feuds transcended. Like, they went on for decades in some instances. And he was in the ring with so many different people in so many situations, you know, picking out five. I thought it was going to be too easy at first, but then, you know, I went, okay, these are the guys, but then, you know, these are the guys that automatically come to mind, but let's dig deeper, you know, let's dig deeper and look at some of the guys who normally wouldn't be in the running and, you know, how do they warrant a place on the list considering he's got so many memorable moments?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I got one on my list that I guarantee, I know you probably don't have him on your list. And I guarantee he wouldn't show up on any of the other ones. But again, okay. I go back to, I remember the series of matches he had with this guy. And literally, when I give you why and who, I think you may see my point on this.
Okay.
Because it's like you said, he brought out the best in some people. And he took them to different levels. So I have been looking forward, and I got to give you credit. You came up with this week's topic, and, you know, it's I think it's a great one, man. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with this.
All right.
So why don't we get that pesky commercial break out of the way, and then when we come back, can start getting into.
We'll jump right in because there's going to be a lot of talk, I imagine. And if you want to call in and talk?
Thank you. The
ahead.
Number is...
Here's your segue.
718-508-9883. And if you call in every day for the next month, Bay Ragney will deliver a pizza to your house.
Trying to get us thrown off the air?
All right. We will see you in 5.
Attention sports fans, collectors, hobbyists, and autograph seekers. Are you looking for the best in sports cards and collectibles? The only name you need to know is Carl's. That's right, Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, PA not only has the best collection of sports memorabilia, cards, game, used merchandise, and autograph signings of top professional athletes, he also does custom framing too. Go to carlscards.com or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Carl's Cards. That's Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA. Remember, Carl's, the only and best name in sports cards and collectibles. For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to teddyscares.com. And be sure to become our friends at facebook.com/teddyscares.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Trash City Beads, the great bead store with the weird name, selling beads and findings for over 25 years. Visit us online at trashcity.com. Like us on Facebook at Trash City Beads. Unique beads, charms, crystals, and findings from all over the world at wholesale prices. No store, no showroom. We are online only. Visit us at trashcity.com. Trash City Beads is your online source for the best beads on the planet. Remember the name, Trash City Beads.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
All right, we are back on the air. And a note from management, if you listen every day for the next month, Bay Ragney will not deliver a pizza to your home.
He won't even deliver a pizza to my home.
What if he ever delivered a pizza?
And I'm the least likable star on his network.
Oh, no. There's more unlikable than you. Maybe me.
Yeah, probably.
I'm not popular in most circles.
As far as I know.
That's not cool. I can hang up on you, you know.
Okay. I'll start my own show.
No, you're contracted to this show. You should have read the fine print. So now let's talk about our man, the Nature Boy.
Woo!
You got to do it. It's like a cleansing thing, you know. It was funny. On a side note, you know, my late mother, who watched wrestling periodically, and her sister, who was her twin, couldn't tell you, you know, who most wrestlers were. Like, they knew Hogan and all. But them two always did the woo. My actual aunt, after my mother passed, would call us every night, and she'd always start off the conversation by going, woo! And it always brought such joy. So, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you, man. The guy, everybody knows who Ric Flair is.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's get into it, man. Let's hear who was first up on your list.
My number five pick is my dark horse pick. It's not the favorable pick. It's not a pick that'll make most people's lists. But when I remember, when I think of memorable Ric Flair feuds and situations, this one always comes to mind, because it was one of the few instances where, you know, Four Horsemen notwithstanding, Four Horsemen always had the numbers game and Flair used that to his great advantage, but it was one of the few times where Ric wasn't necessarily the underdog in his match. And a lot of times Flair was outsized by big dudes, you know, your monster-sized wrestlers. And this is one of the one times where the
before
guy
you go
was,
any further,
wait,
before you go any further, I know exactly who you're going to say, and he just missed my list, so go ahead, because this is
all right.
This is great.
I was going to go with one half of the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton.
Yes! Yes! I thought that feud was phenomenal.
Yeah, and then I was a bit, and what really set it off is I've always been a tag team guy. I say that almost every week. I love tag team wrestling, especially 80s tag team wrestling, when it was just an art. But, you know, when he broke Morton's face and ran it down, and Ricky and Robert were probably the best underdogs in the history of anything. And, you know, him trying to overthrow Flair was a storyline you didn't see much.
Yeah, and like you said, when they did that when they jumped him in the locker room and they rubbed his face in the ground, he came up with the big the floor burn. You were just like, wow.
Yeah. And you know, I believe it was during Bash season, and that's when Flair would often feud with guys he wouldn't normally feud with, because at the time he had that crazy Bash schedule where he was literally defending against everybody on the roster. And there were so many times in situations like that where they made guys who wouldn't normally be main eventers into big players, even if just temporary. And the fact that, you know, the whole world for a red-hot minute was rallying behind Ricky Morton, one half of the Rock and Roll Express, at that, a tag team specialist who never really had a singles run ever, which always stuck out to me. And it made me appreciate the Rock and Rolls more. And the fact that they didn't split them up and they still were a tag team of brothers. And, you know, the fact that Flair was literally kind of bullying this little guy and Ricky had to climb that mountain. And it, to me, it's a memory whenever I think of memorable Flair moments, just that him brutalizing Morton in the ring.
Exactly. And like, but you went into that believing every time that, you know what, tonight could be Morton's night. Tonight could be Morton's
right.
night. You never just
yeah.
discounted him. And real quick, just to let all our callers know and everybody, as we're talking and giving out our list, if you check out the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour Facebook page, I'm going to be putting up some of the matches of – I just put up Ric Flair versus Ricky Morton, so you can get a chance to, you know, see what we're talking about. So, you know, we're trying to get back here a little.
There you go. We're making good on the.
But,
on,
but like
I don't know
I
what
said,
we're making good on. We're showing the love to our fan.
Exactly, because you know what, we're all about retro wrestling. And if you don't, if you've never seen the Ric Flair Ricky Morton matches. Yeah, I guarantee the one I just put up will get you hooked. And that's the great thing about YouTube, man. You can find a lot of these matches that you haven't seen in years. And now with the, you know, where you could put it on the TV, you could just sit there and lose yourself in some of this old stuff, and it's just great.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like I said, I thought that was one of the greatest feuds. And the best part about it was, is even though he was a tag team wrestler, didn't they branch off Robert Gibson against, I think it was Tully Blanchard at the time?
Yeah, I think he was, because they were splitting him up, and they weren't going to keep both, you know, one of the Rock and Roll Express on the road. He did, usually Tully, sometimes Arn, he was working the other horseman on the show just to keep the store whenever he would work Flair in that.
Yeah, and like I said, that just missed my list. And it's funny because as soon as you started talking about it, I started getting giddy because I knew. I was like, yes, yes. So that I think your first one is spot on there, Mike.
Awesome.
So my number, again, this is my Dark Horse pick.
Okay.
And this is one a lot of people may overlook. But it was Ric Flair and David Von Erich. Now, I know everybody wants to go right to Kerry because that's who won the belt. But remember, David was supposed to be the man. And if you've seen any of their matches,
yeah.
I will tell you right now, they're all memorable.
Okay.
And there was one, and I'm going to try and find that, where actually David defeated Ric Flair. You literally thought the roof was going to blow, like the proverbial roof was going to blow off the place.
I would love to see that happen just once. It happened to me in an Irish festival in a tent, but it just wasn't the same as having the roof blown off by 90,000 people, literally. That would have been so cool. And, you know,
I think
probably detrimental
JR
to the show
would, Jim Ross would legitimately have a heart attack.
Back down.
Did you know why?
20 years, and it literally
if the roof blows off the place, then that means there's going to be a slobber knocker. And it's just going to be slobber all day. It'll be horrible. Anyway. But like I said, everyone went with, you know, everyone when they think Von Erichs, they were like, oh, Kerry. And a lot of people forget that David was actually the best wrestler of the bunch. And, you know, he probably would have won the belt when Kerry won it at the Superdome. I think that was actually the original plan. And David was really charismatic, and him every time him and Flair got in that ring, whether it was Georgia, whether it was Texas, they just put, it was magic. It was like they almost had an ebb and flow, and they went back and forth so smoothly. And it's just a shame, like I said, you know, David passed away at an early age. I think those two would have been feuding for many years to come.
Yeah, I can't honestly say I've ever really seen a Flair David match. I've seen the Kerry matches. I've seen the Kevin matches. You know, I heard the same stories you did, that David was going to be the guy for the big show for World Class. He was, but you know, then he passed away. The Von Erich. So many stories about the Von Erichs and all, but. You know, that was just a testament to Flair going town to town. You know, he had so many memorable feuds because he would come into the home promotion. He would come into your World Class. He would come into your Memphis. And he would come into, you know, so many different things. And, you know, I remember hearing stories from Lawler about how they would book him in there. And, you know, he really could work, make any local guy for any territory just come off looking like $1 million, but still manage to be the man.
Exactly. And like I was saying, we're going to be putting the matches up. Did I find a good one? I found the 30-minute match that actually made me pick this feud. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, the footage is a little grainy, but you can appreciate, you'll appreciate it, trust me. So if you've
there
never
you
seen a David Von Erich Ric Flair match, this is your chance. So,
like I said, that was kind of my dark horse.
Yeah, and I said the reason that was my dark horse and the one I think would have surprised people is because it to me, like I said, when I picked who I thought Flair was, it all boiled down to did I remember the matches, did I remember certain things about the feud that and that I can, you know, basically tell you the matches that I saw from beginning to end. So that is my number five. Who's next on your list, sir?
My number four pick is one that's going to be on everybody's list, I'm sure. But the reason I picked it is because anybody else, Ric Flair is responsible for this man being a star. And from their first encounter to their last encounter, it's almost like Flair's mission in life was to make this guy look larger than life and look like a star. And, you know, I don't know that he would have reached the heights that he did, considering he was a very charismatic wrestler. He had a great persona early on. He had literally a transcendent persona later in his career. But, you know, none of it would have been possible for the man called Sting if not for Ric Flair. So my number four is Sting.
You know what? I can't argue with you. If a lot of people remember, that was the famous Clash of the Champions that had the wrestling world glued to the... That was the 2 out of 3 falls. And every time... I really do. I'm with you. I don't think Sting would... Sting, sorry. No offense there, fella. I don't think Sting would have been...
Not a Sting fan, are you?
No. I'm a huge Sting fan. I honestly don't think Sting would have been as large without Flair, because when Flair wasn't around, he was kind of missing something.
I don't know if he was missing something per se, but I think... You know, Sting, he saw something in Sting, obviously, and the Clash of the Champions match that everybody talks about, he made Sting's career, for sure. And then his chasing of Flair to get to the WCW championship with the broken leg and the big return, up until he won it, to the point where his title reign was actually anticlimactic, and I think that's what you're thinking of more than anything. The goofy Black Scorpion run, and then his whole first title run fell short. But, you know, Sting wasn't a great talker, which I think was brilliant when they came up with the idea for him to do the crow gimmick, so to speak, and he never had to say a word, was the best he has ever been in his career. Because sometimes he would just choke all over his words. It was like hosting a radio show with you. And, Flair just made him, the in-ring action, the fact that he would just bounce off him for 30, 40, 50 minutes and just make Sting look unstoppable in the ring. And there was a great contrast in styles, because you had your larger-than-life, you know, cartoon-colored superhero versus, you know, the styling and profiling ladies man. And it just worked. And you know, Sting had a great, great career and went on to some amazing stuff, but I don't know that he ever would have gotten there without the rub from Flair.
Like I said, I'm with you. I don't think he would have. But, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, not at all. And that's you know, the job, you know, of these is to make each other in the ring, to make your partner look good. And Flair was the best at it in the business, period, I think. Sting had great matches with Vader. He had the run with the NWO, which... You know, started out so hot and strong and amazing, and you know, kind of fizzled because of the crazy booking philosophies behind it. But you know, I think it just, you know, he made Sting, and I don't think anyone, including Sting, would deny that, because it was at a time where, you know, when you went into that transitional time for when NWA became WCW, they weren't good at making guys, and if Flair hadn't made Sting, I would have hated to see what would have happened to him.
I agree with you 122%. Now, the next guy on my list probably would make most Ric Flair lists, and I think that's a good thing. But I also think he gets overlooked on a lot of the list, and that would be my man, one Mr. Harley Race.
All right.
I thought that, you know, it made you, if you've seen Starrcade 83.
Which I have seen several times.
And did that not make you a huge Flair fan? Because he went out there, and remember, at the time, Harley Race was the tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not the pretty boy, not the...
No,
the guy that just go out there and beat you. And then on the opposite end, and the funny part was it literally was one of the few times that Flair would get cheered before he became really popular, because even though Flair was a bad guy, they wanted to see him beat Harley Race, and no one thought he could because, you know, he was the pretty boy. He was the nature boy. You know, he's all... You know, Race would come out with his robe and no nonsense and want to punch you in the mouth, and then Flair wanted to come out with the styling and profiling. But when he won that belt for the first time, man, you lost it. You know, the Flair for the Gold was probably one of the greatest pay-per-views ever. And I think that the feud, unfortunately, was cut short because of Harley's age at the time. And but I definitely got to put that in my top, you know.
Yeah, I think it, honestly, when you can't deny the Flair Race, you know. But I think it's also going to be, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably the only time we're going to be talking on this list where Flair was the babyface in the feud situation. And yeah, Flair was the upstart. He was up and coming. You know, the Flair for the Gold was legendary run, and, you know, most of it, honestly, I've watched in hindsight. I, you know, thanks to YouTube and videos and so many thousands of recaps of retrospective Flair. I think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, he made his career and his legacy as the bad guy. The Nature Boy was the dirtiest player in the game, as he liked to say, but, you know, he was clearly the cheered guy in the situation with Race, and he turned himself, and when he wanted to, he could turn around and be a huge baby face. And Race was the tough, nasty, brutal old champion. He was the changing of the guard, literally, because Race was the NWA guy for so many years leading up to Flair, and then it literally was a handoff because, you know, Flair took Race's spot, both literally and figuratively, as the guy for the NWA.
Yeah. And people forget that Race was a 7-time NWA heavyweight champion.
Right.
You know, you had Bruno in the WWF, and you had Race in NWA, and they were considered the two unbeatables. And for Flair to come in, and it was done right, too. It wasn't like... You know, he just came in and, you know, he had to fight. You know, he had to go through some horrible, you know, some big feuds to get to that point. And it was, I think, one of the greatest payoffs in wrestling.
So. It was definitely up there, especially, you know, when you're retrospecting Flair's career, it's probably one of the biggest ones is his first time to the top of the mountain, especially after the plane crash and the real story behind the story in that situation.
Exactly. All right, partner, who you got coming in next?
My next pick is probably the best matches. Pure scientific wrestling matches that Flair's ever had. And Flair had a reputation for being, you know, a technical genius. He could work with anybody. But the truth of the matter is, he had his, you know, he criticized other guys for things that Flair did as well. You know, there are certain guys like Ric Flair and Bret Hart who they act like they didn't have a move set, and they didn't have certain things they went back to again and again and again. But these two guys really just did something different every time they were in the ring, and they did things in the ring that, you know, as far as captivating storytelling, has never come close to being, at least that I've ever seen, has come close to being told again. And that's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And, you know, I didn't get to see their early U.S. title stuff when they were first coming in, but I absolutely
I am so glad
remember the 80s championship run. The 90 minute, and I know so many of these you were able to watch because they happened on Clash of the Champions, and, you know, pay-per-view, at least in this area where I was finally starting to get in the area so I could watch them, but just amazing, amazing matches. And they literally kept you glued to the edge of your seat. And to the idea of sitting and watching a 90 minute wrestling match seems absolutely absurd, considering how many times you're watching a 20-minute match at a major pay-per-view, and you're like, oh, will this ever end? But, you know, I remember sitting for 90 minutes on a Sunday afternoon, I think it was, glued to the television, because these two guys were just tearing it up.
Now I got an interesting question. Because this is, and you can only pose it with these two wrestlers. Did you prefer Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair pre-WWF Steamboat or post-WWF Steamboat?
I've only really got to see post. I got, you know, I'm referencing, now I know they had a series of classic matches before he went to the WWF and became the Dragon. I'm talking about once he showed back up, I talked about it a couple weeks ago. When he showed back up on TBS as Eddie Gilbert's partner and went on to beat Flair for the championship, and he lost it at WrestleMania. Well, that specifically is the group of matches I'm talking about. I know they had hundreds and hundreds of great matches, but honestly, you know, it was the magazine era. I read about them. Didn't see a lot. They were old house shows things, so there's not a lot of footage of them because they weren't, you know, necessarily a lot of televised matches and whatnot. The 80s run is what I'm specifically talking about.
Yes. And I had the pleasure of seeing Flair Steamboat live the week before Steamboat went to the WWF. It was the first NWA card in Philadelphia ever at the Civic Center, and that was the main event. It was Flair and Steamboat, because Steamboat shocked the heck out of everybody. Because at those shows, the security was really, they didn't know what they were doing at the Civic Center for wrestling. They never had wrestling. This was the first show. So literally, you could make your way to the back to where the wrestlers were leaving. And of course, Steamboat was leaving, and he was very nice signing autographs for everybody. And somebody just posed a question, and this was before, like, you know, internet and all that. Somebody posed a question to him, said, hey, are you ever going to the WWF? Steamboat, signing the autograph, looked up without missing a beat and said, yeah, next week. And everybody just like, oh. And literally, he appeared on TV a few weeks later. And everybody was like, wow. Like, you didn't know at the time you were getting that scoop.
Right.
But the thing I remember is this was my first time seeing Flair or Steamboat live. And I mean, you know, like I said, this was the first card of NWA at the Civic Center, so it was magical to begin with, because these were guys that I only saw on TV, on the old
right.
on Georgia, and seeing that match live, unbelievable, and it did live up to the hype. And when he came back, I thought, you know what, that was probably one of the best re-debuts in history when he was the mystery partner.
Yeah.
Man, I usually I can find fault with some of your picks, but you're nailing them, brother. They're on the money, man. I can't argue with you on any of these, and they're such great ones. And that just goes to show you too what we were talking about. Flair just is unbelievable. when it comes to some of these feuds. Now, my next pick is one that, you know, they're not going to win technical match, but for overall feud, I thought it was great, was Ric Flair and Lex Luger.
Really?
I never thought, I you know what, they always said Luger was supposed to be the man, and you were expecting him to turn into something special, but it seemed like when he was in there with Flair, him against Flair, that magic was there. And I just never seen him achieve that magic with anyone else.
Interesting. I briefly, you know, I went down the series of matches. Luger was on the, but, you know, Luger falls in line with, to me, like, there was never anything really special there. Nothing magical. He worked to me, like, when I look back on it, and I remember he worked the same match with Luger that he worked with Road Warrior Animal. And, you know, the Warlord and all those big guys. I'm not a huge Luger guy. There were times where Luger, you know, seemed to be, you know, on the verge of something big. But, you know, a lot in the early days, to me, it was, you know, clothesline out of the corner, clothesline out of the corner, clothesline out of the corner, no sell the chop, clothesline out of the corner. And you know, the storyline with Luger never really, for me personally, never really, you know, caught fire and captivated me. You know, I always thought, and then, you know, the Luger stories are legendary about him never quite being who they pegged him. He was going to be the next Hogan. He was, you know, hot-shotted into the NWA and into the Horsemen. Flair, they had some definite good matches, and there was the situation where they thought they beat, they thought that he beat Flair. Was it Maryland?
I think so.
The blood, where they stopped the match. You know, it was the only real Luger Flair memory that I could think of, which was a great idea to heal the Maryland State Athletic Commission. But so a Luger guy, huh?
Yeah. Like I said, it was just a series of matches that I remember and remember fondly. Now, I got a surprise for you.
All right.
You know, once in a while we always have, like, special guests call in and they want to give their opinions?
Oh, yes.
Well, we have such a person on the line. Hot off his spectacular return to the ring at the LAW March show, our good friend, Norm the Barfly.
Norm!
What's up, guys?
Hey, Normie. Well, Norm, you heard we're talking about Ric Flair and some of his greatest feuds. So, as always, when you call in, we let you jump right into the mix. So, what do you got for us, brother?
Okay. For me, Flair's greatest feud, and it's one he can never win, was the feud with being married.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with finances.
He's had almost as many wives as he's had title runs.
Well, you're that the IRS, but, you know.
And he married his maid. Or is that who he's living with now? Is he married to her?
I don't know. I asked that a couple weeks ago, and I was told they're not married. So I don't know if it's true or not. He married his French maid.
Do you guys ever watch that show? And probably not. And there was only one reason I watched it, but the Celebrity Wife Swap show?
No.
No.
They had one a couple years ago. Flair and Piper. And Fifi went to live with Piper, and Piper's wife went to live with Flair. And it literally showed you how much of a mess he is when it comes to marriage and his finances. So if you ever get a chance, it's probably on the internet somewhere, or Hulu or one of them. You got to check it out. It is a very entertaining show.
Everything is on the internet somewhere.
That's true. Just ask Hulk Hogan.
Who
is a lot richer today.
He's a lot richer than I think.
I was going to say, he's blowing up my news feed right now.
He won $115 million today.
Good for him, because, you know, it cost him quite a bit. You know, and these scumbag sites who go around and troll people's personal lives, you know, really deserve to get slapped down once in a while. I'm glad, because that led to him, you know, losing his WWE job again. Using, you know, they were using him in a great capacity. It cost him, you know, countless of internet memes. And, you know, I'm glad for the Hulkster. You know, good for him.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the one thing I found interesting is, you know how you can, in the United States, you can appeal judgments like that?
Yeah.
Well, apparently, if you ever want to sue somebody in the state of Florida. Because for you to appeal it, you have to put up, like, almost half of the money in a bond. So they are talking about Gawker wants to appeal it, but they don't know if they can get the $50 million bond necessary to appeal it.
There you go.
So they're probably going to be going bankrupt soon. Which, if you put them out of business, hey, you know, but that's to our good friend Hulk Hogan. And speaking of Hulk Hogan, brings me to the next man on my list, and that would be one Mr. Hulk Hogan. Because him and Flair, I thought they were great together. The only time I didn't like Hogan Flair was when the NWO was involved. I think they didn't need the whole NWO and that fraction going on. I just thought when Flair and Hogan got in there, you literally had the two biggest stars in wrestling just going out there and puffing up their egos and seeing who was going to come out on top.
Well, Hogan's actually higher on my list than on yours. So I'll just slide my comments in here, and I actually have to disagree, because one of the most brilliant Hogan Flair moments happened when Hogan was in the NWO. And it just goes to show that these two guys were masters everywhere they went. And their feud really went on for 20 years before they even got in the ring. Because there was always that debate over who was better. And there still, to some point, is a debate over who was better, Hogan or Flair. And truly, it was always an apples and oranges scenario, even though they both were, you know, professional wrestlers. They were both very different types of professional wrestlers. But, you know, for 20 years it was who was better, and then finally we got to see a taste of it, and I'll never truly understand what went haywire and why Vince didn't make a mint off of that, but it wasn't until Hogan hit WCW that feud really got going and kept going, and it went on for a while. The NWO thing I started to talk about, you know, these guys were such masters. They went into the ring where Hogan was one of the biggest heels in the universe, and Flair was actually the sympathetic babyface against the NWO, because the entire WCW should have been the sympathetic babyface. And in the course of a steel cage match, they literally pulled a double turn. And Hogan started hulking up, and Flair started cheating. And by the end of the match, their roles were 100% completely reversed. Hogan was a babyface again, and Flair was a heel again, and the crowd switched with him along the way. And that was just masterful to me. And even up to that last goofy little run they had on the Legends Tour, that Hulk Hogan Legendary Tour that they did, where both of them were like so old as dirt. But from what I heard, they tore the house up every night. And the video footage I saw of these two crazy old men beating each other around, just tearing the place apart, you know, it's why they are the two best in the business. And their feud
just transcended everything as far as wrestling goes to me.
Yeah, hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah, in agreement, like you said, their feud was more outside the ring through the 80s. What was better, Flair Hogan, NWA, WWF? Because they were the poster boys for their respective companies. And the debate raged on for years, depending on where you lived.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It went bigger than just the two men, the two companies, because both of them were, you know, the NWA, Flair was the wrestler, and the NWA was the wrestling company, and Hulk Hogan was the entertainer, and WWF was the entertainment company. And they literally feuded over that, and they were, you know, like you said, the poster boys for that. So absolutely, it actually was, you know, the feud of the business.
Yeah, it's and I gotta apologize to you, Matt. I think I stepped on number two on you because I went ahead of you. I did two in a row actually. So
no, it's quite all right. Hogan was going to be you know, it was back and forth my one and two. I decided to make Hogan my one because
okay.
Like we've just been talking, it literally transcended everything. So
and I have a strong feeling your number two is my number one.
It's got to be, because there's one guy we have. The fact that it has been 51 minutes, according to my time right here, and his name has not been spoken once, there really is only one other guy on both of our lists, or should be.
I'll let you do it. And could you do the voice?
Can I do the voice? Can I bring? All right. Fine. I'll do the – and actually, I've got to say I'm quite surprised because I for sure thought that you were going to – well, we'll get back to that in a minute. We have time. But, you know, clearly one of the biggest feuds and probably the feud that he is most associated with, bar none, has to be his feud that transcended – you know, it was the feud for – most of his career in the NWA, and it just traveled the country. You know, obviously, I'm talking about George South.
Dude, he's that time that you thought South almost pinned Flair.
That was amazing.
It was.
How many times did George South almost win the NWA championship? And right now, these seven people listening to the show are going, what the hell is he talking about?
Norm's here tonight, 8.
Yeah, exactly. No, clearly I'm talking
here. I just
about
always call in.
Right.
The American dream doth arose.
And it's funny. This is a rarity. Like I said, the fact that you're number one was my two, and my your two was my one is phenomenal. But you can't say enough about those two. They had magic, and I'll be honest with you, the money was always in Dusty chasing Flair, never catching him.
Oh yeah. Well yeah, we talked about it. I think Dusty Rhodes was the best chaser in the history of wrestling. I think I called him that last week. He literally would make any champion look like gold when he was chasing that belt. But when it was Flair, it was magical. And, you know, there's so many stories and there's so many matches. And for every match you can think of, there's five you can't, that where these guys just literally electrified house show after house show. Their promos, the Hard Times was directly tied to Ric Flair, the most legendary promo in all of wrestling. You know, these two guys could do it. And it's interesting because you would hear, you know, here in retrospectives and back behind the scenes things, there was a bit of, like the Hogan situation, there was a bit of a behind the scenes rivalry between the two too, because they were always trying to outdo themselves. You know, one would go buy a brand new car, the other one would go out buy a nicer car. You know, one would go and buy a brand new robe, the other one would go out and buy a bigger robe or go buy a mink coat. And, you know, it was the two alpha dogs of the company. And, you know, they represented two very different lifestyles. And I think that's one of the things that really made it work.
Exactly. And it's, you know, you talk about the Flair. No one ever overlooks Starrcade 85 when Dusty and Flair with in that match. You literally, I think the match was almost 20 minutes or maybe a little longer. And it was just, you knew something was going to happen that night, but you just didn't know what. And like I said, Dusty was the greatest chaser, and to have the ultimate chasee in Flair just made that feud that much more magical. Like, each week, you were just like, catch him, catch him, catch him. And it was almost like, you know, that one episode where Wiley finally caught the Roadrunner, and you're like, oh, no, let him go. Because you wanted to have the fun of watching.
Well, I don't think I was saying that, because I don't think I said that at all, because, you know, I was, you know, they had me hook, line, and sinker. I was cheering like crazy that Dusty won the belt. It was 2 weeks later when he dropped it back, and I went, what the heck happened?
Well, and that's what I mean, because then you were so excited that he was going to get it back, and you were just waiting each week, and they had you. They had, like you said, they had you hook, line, and sinker, because each week you were like, this is the week he gets it back. No, this is the week he gets it back. 14 years later, this is the week he gets it back. I'm still expecting Dusty to go after Flair at some point.
I really would have liked to have seen them get at it one more time as crazy old men. Like, Hogan and Flair got to go at it a few times as crazy old men.
Yes.
They really didn't, you know, it won just one time in the WWE, just get into a little scuffle. Or if they did, I missed it.
No, I think didn't they team in the WWE?
Yeah, I think since they both went to the Legends deal, they've kind of portrayed them both as friends. I don't think they were ever really against each other. But, yeah, I was going to go somewhere else, and I got derailed. But, yeah, it was – oh, that was – I think that's what I was going to say. You know, the thing about Flair and Dusty is, you know, by the time it was done and they had wrestled each other literally for 10 years everywhere – I remember thinking, and I said this before on the show, I remember thinking, man, I really don't ever need to see a Dusty Flair match again. I think I'd literally seen everything they could say, and it was a few years later. You know, it was down the road, and you start to see, you really start to go, man, what I wouldn't give for one more round of Dusty Flair. You know, it was like a guilty pleasure coming back.
Oh, I agree with you 150% on that. That... Which is one of them things, man, that if they said, hey, you can have two wrestlers go back to their prime and wrestle today, they would be my pick.
Yeah,
Norman,
definitely.
I was just trying to get Norm to chime in and see his thoughts on the whole Flair Dusty.
Oh, well, it was, I mean... Like you guys had said, it was absolute brilliant the way they set it up. You know, it was never Flair Dusty. It was always Dusty and the Horseman. Whatever iteration of the Horseman it was. You know, which led to War Games, which led to all these other matches. It was Flair and Dusty. It was, you didn't think, because, you know, Dusty, you look at Dusty, you're like, what's this guy going to do? They go out there 20, 30, 45 minutes some nights and tear the house down.
Well, and you got to remember, Dusty was actually the reason the Horseman was created, if you remember. Because him and Flair were feuding, then all of a sudden Flair brought in his cousins, quote-unquote, in the Andersons, to help him in his feud with Dusty Rhodes, and then somehow Tully got into the mix, and there you had the Four Horsemen. So conceivably, without Dusty, there would be no Four Horsemen.
Yeah, and you did touch on something there. It really was, you know, one of the things Dusty had to chase was he had to get through all of the Horsemen to get there, which made it an even greater chase.
It was, because it was like, oh, Dusty's got Flair. Oh, no, here come the Horsemen. Darn those evil gentlemen. Like I said, this was... late 80s, there's no internet, there's no, you know, live TV, except for a closed circuit or pay-per-view. And so you're like, oh, it's going to happen. Oh, no. Oh, man, there's Tully again. What's he doing? You know, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And every week you would go off the air thinking, this is it. Dusty's going to get him. And then every week you would start off and you would go, oh, man. They got away again. The horsemen intervened again. How are they going to keep the horsemen out? They're going to put him in a cage. Well, that didn't work. They're going to bring in the Road Warriors, and that's going to straighten things out. And that didn't work. And, you know, it was always Flair one step ahead, Flair and the Horsemen one step ahead of Dusty chasing, and that just made magic week after week.
And then again, that's what led to 88 with the War Games, you know, one of the coolest match concepts ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I agree with you. I am, like, so shocked at the WWF hasn't brought that match back.
I guess would Cody and Dustin own that now? Put Dusty on the right foot.
Yeah, I had heard that's why it never came back. Dusty owned the match, but yeah, would he have left the? How would that work with his estate? I guess would be handling that. So I guess his sons, but. Yeah, again, I never knew, although now it would be a tougher situation considering their current roster, but they never actually went there. And they, you know, honestly, I'll say it out loud. I think the Elimination Chamber is the dumbest thing in the history of the world, and they keep going back to it. You know, I would much rather see a War Game situation. I once said to save, because they've had trouble with Survivor Series over the years, I said, you know, they should literally make War Games the main event of the Survivor Series every year.
That'd be cool. I mean, I guess now the way they configure things, they're trying to squeeze. I mean, you have to have all their big production sets. I mean, you're talking the first War Games, and I was at one at the Civic Center. It was just two rings in a cage. There was no big Titantron, no ramp, no...
Yeah.
A lot of floor seating, production stuff.
That's true. And putting up a second ring in a cage around, it's going to eat up a lot of... eat up a lot of seats.
Yeah, but you know what? The setup time now would be, you know, they would just drop the cage. So it wouldn't be
true.
And
but
I don't
from
think it'll eat up as many seats as you think.
So you'd have to
yeah,
have two rings up all night.
Right, exactly. And it's from a schematic sense, having two rings all night long would make for a camera crew nightmare.
But you know what? If you think back to some of them shows, didn't those two rings lead to some real fun spots? When
yeah.
you would get guys in earlier matches who would get a little creative with the two rings?
See, I'd go to the wrong ring. I would just mess with it. I would literally, every time my opponent got in one ring, I'd get in the other.
There was, and I'm trying, and it'll probably hit me after the show, or if you guys remember, there was one... They literally threw the two workers were wrestling in the one ring, threw them into the other, and then just started working in that one, and the ref had to climb through the ropes. And then they threw them back into the other one, and the ref had to go back.
I think they've done that a couple times.
Oh, I'm sure.
I remember the one working, he ended up getting his head stuck between the rings.
I remember that. I'm pretty sure that picture ran every month in PWI for like 5 years. There was some random excuse to run Barry Windham's head stuck between the two rings.
No, because being 6'6", he just saw his legs and, you know.
Right.
Now, that's one guy I'm surprised didn't make either of our lists. Was Barry Windham Ric Flair.
You know, Barry, I considered Barry for a hot minute, but it was such a short window, and nothing ever came of it to me. They were good matches, but they weren't better than some of the other matches. Like, Flair's, there's 100 guys we could say Flair had great matches with, but, you know, not greatest. You know, guy I considered for a minute that I thought for sure you were going to go with because, you know, he's one of the guys you try to work into every show was Piper.
And you know what? I would have considered it, but while the Piper Flair feud was memorable, it kind of peaked really quick with their match at the One Starcade, and that was kind of it. You know, because they always made a big deal about how they were the biggest rivals, but they really didn't have as many matches as people think they had.
Right, and that's my point. It wasn't as memorable as some of the others. I enjoyed some of their WWF stuff that they did when he first came in, because they threw Piper at him, I think, as a comfort thing.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah, there's hundreds of guys we can go down. Some of the biggest names in the business you can go down. And, you know, just to narrow it down to some of the ones who were the most, like guys like Terry Funk, Jerry Lawler. You know, the Jerry Lawler story comes to mind that Lawler loves to tell about how Flair and him worked the whole crowd the one night and turned it on its ear, because it wasn't about, you know, Flair was coming in as the NWA champion and he thought he was going to beat up on the local Memphis champion being Lawler. And, you know, as the night went on, Flair kept trying to, you know, take out Lawler, but he wouldn't stay down. And then, you know, halfway through the match, it became clear that the story wasn't can Lawler beat Flair, it's can Flair beat Lawler. And I just thought it was two geniuses at work.
Yeah. And I actually just posted one of their matches on the LAW Retro Wrestling page, if you guys want to see that. Also because them two worked really well together. I would have liked to seen them do a lot more than what they did.
Is that Flair and Lawler?
Yeah.
Lawler, up until DWA, he wasn't in Memphis to go anywhere full-time. And if Flair can only go there with so many times.
Yeah.
Once Crockett tried to go national, that kind of stopped all that territory hopping for your championship.
So, Norm, is there anybody that we left off that you thought should be included, or is there somebody you wanted to give an honorable mention to?
I was thinking Wyndham, but like I said, I remember the matches, but not much of a payoff. Like, a feud has to have some kind of payoff at the end of it.
Now my thing with Wyndham was, I thought when that feud just started getting going, they put the kibosh on it, and he went into the Horseman. I thought that was actually the point where the feud was going to get really interesting.
Now, at that point, he was feuding with Sting, and Luger and Wyndham were feuding with the Felony Arm.
Right.
That is dumb. Not really, because it was just, they put Flair, you know, when they need to get somebody over, or they need to make somebody a transitory champion to give Flair a break for a month or two, or in Kerry's case, 18 days.
Right. And the thing that killed the Wyndham for me to even consider it is they had some really good matches. I remember one on television. They went almost an hour on Worldwide. And it was like, oh, my God, we're getting Flair versus Barry on free TV. The one that killed it for me is, and I think we were in the building at the time, Normie, is when Wyndham was the surprise mystery opponent to come get Flair, and he was like 80 pounds out of shape and fat and sloppy and could barely get in the ring.
That was a slamboree, right?
Yeah,
and it was the worst kept secret in town. Everybody in Philly knew Wyndham was there.
Right. he didn't try to hide himself at all.
Stopped at the bar and had some chicken wings? Beforehand, did he?
Chicken, I think.
He had something, because he was a mess. He ring rust and sloppy and out of shape and, you know, brought his old tights that he barely fit into. It really was just an embarrassing situation for everybody involved.
I actually don't remember that one, but that sounds pretty.
Five, maybe.
Yeah, it was in Philly. We were there.
Vader was on the show. I think it was Rude Chono, maybe, for the international title.
Yes, when the fight broke out in the crowd.
Yeah, and they spun the reverse chin lock to watch the fight.
And you know, exactly.
But, I mean, feuds, I remember, you know, when Flair ended up feuding with Muda and Funk and turned baby, him and Sting were you know. But again, it wasn't really much of a payoff feud.
Right.
But the feud came on was dusty. Even in WWF, he didn't really have anything, I don't say noteworthy, but it stands out as a major feud.
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered all of the big ones tonight. I'm trying to think if we missed any of the major. And there were. Like, I thought, you know, I kind of went, yeah. You know, him and Michaels had a couple decent matches, but nothing to
yeah.
the point of.
I think the one potential feud for play that never happened, that was supposed to happen, was him and Magnum T.A.
Yeah.
And I think that was supposed to get started right about the time Magnum had his car accident. I think
right.
he thought he was going to be the heir apparent for a little while.
Yeah, he was going to take over where Dusty Rhodes left off, basically.
Yeah, they were grooming him for a big spot.
And then
I don't know that they would have put the strap on him, but he was definitely going to be in the mix.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Flair has talked about that Magnum was going to get it at some point.
Because he had just come off the Best of Seven with Nikita.
Right.
And I think they were priming him to make the run, and unfortunately, the car accident. Then they went back to old Mr. Reliable, Dusty Rhodes.
Exactly. The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
And every company needs that guy. Right now they have Kane back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Dusty.
Right.
But that's the feud that never happened and probably would have.
Yeah, that would have been interesting to see, because I mean they had some run-ins clearly,
yeah,
as the Risky Business Boys, but they never really had that opportunity to see what he could do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, sorry, the one thing that never happened that probably would have.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm going to drop off, but just on a quick note, Matt.
Yes, sir.
If they're listening, I don't know if they are, if that British thug in French, whatever you want to call them, decide they want to try it, I'm there if you need me.
All right. You will be the first person I call when we get that match signed.
You got it.
Oh, trust me. And them two are listening. Oh, I heard an earful from them about last week's show.
French toast and fish and chips.
French toast, fish and chips. Now I'm hungry.
they're better off starting a restaurant.
All right. Have
yeah,
a
well.
Your show, fellas.
Thanks,
all right, Normie.
You're always welcome to call in, my friend.
All right.
That was our good friend Norm the Barfly calling in. Always nice to get his take on things. You know,
I think so.
He's always got a different approach.
Well, he's not lying, though. Flair has never been able to conquer marriage. He's done the job to it numerous times.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't know if he was going marriage or finances, but both of them were.
The IRS has also
rival.
Gotten the better of him. The IRS has also gotten the best of him numerous times.
Just a quick, another note. While I was searching and I was throwing up some videos for our fans to watch on the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour Facebook page, I came across that's right, because I want people to go see it. I want them to enjoy what we have to offer. But
with the plugs.
All right, that'll be the last plug. But just real quick, Ric Flair and Antonio Inoki from the North Korea show, 1995. Give it a watch, because, you know, this was when they were both a little older. But watch these two going hold for hold in a catch-can wrestling style match, and you'll really, really appreciate the greatness that is Ric Flair.
He's not on your list.
No, I didn't say
it was on my list. You can't diss Inoki and then just put up a match and act like he's your boy. That's not right. You didn't give Inoki any love.
Well, it's Inoki. He didn't feud with him enough. I'm sure if Flair and Inoki had a series of matches, they would probably be there. Because that Inoki looked like a mean SOB.
I've never had him over for dinner.
Didn't he become like the general of Japan or something?
I think you're right. He's actually in charge of Japan now.
Yeah, yeah. As well, you know what? Maybe that's what the United States should start thinking about. Putting a wrestler in charge.
Wasn't Jesse going to run? Jesse was considering running at one point.
No, no, I said a wrestler.
Jesse the Body Ventura. Don't this Jesse the Body Ventura. What's wrong with you?
Have you follow him at all? He is like one of the biggest whiners on the planet.
He's a nut job. That's why he's entertaining.
Yeah. Apparently
he was always a whiner.
Mexico.
Okay. He was always a whiner.
He literally brags about living in Mexico and paying off the police so that they take care of him.
You do the same.
Yeah, that's great. I don't pay off the police anymore. I can't afford it. Not on what Bay pays me.
I thought we weren't allowed to make fun of the show anymore.
We're not making fun of the show. We're making fun of Bay's pay.
Oh, okay. That's okay then.
Yeah, yeah.
They're listening to us. We're on double secret probation.
Mind if we dance with your dates? Yes, I wholeheartedly expect us to just get caught up. I expect the passcode to be changed one day when we go to log in.
The microphone's just going to be dead. There is no more retro wrestling.
But that's when we start the totally LAW slamtastic comic book wrestling super mashup everything is cool show.
Remember our comic book show? That was an awesome show.
I know. We had, you know what? We are like the like masters of all media.
We're the worst married couple in the history of radio. Let's just change the format of the show every week and not tell anybody. And next week we'll talk about comic books, and the week after that we'll talk about the opera. The week after that we'll talk sports. And every week
I
have no idea what we're talking about. Just to see how long it goes before anyone actually realizes we're still on the air.
Why don't we just go on everyone else's show and just hijack it?
They won't let us. I actually get anti-friend requests. Please don't come on my show if there's something wrong with you. And that came from my mom.
Oh, and that reminds me. Next week's topic.
Yes, Norm, we are completely off the rails. Hold on. Norm just texted me to say we've gone completely off the rails. Yes, Norm, we are completely off the rails.
Yes. Because next week we're going to be talking about cannolis and Batman. How does
cannolis and
mean?
Batman it is. I bet cannolis.
All right, partner. Well, it was a fun show like I knew it was going to be. I could see us doing more shows like this in the future where we pick a subject and just go over some of their feuds. Definitely down the line because there's so many great wrestlers out there who've had long, wonderful careers, and we could just talk about some of the fun. Because, in the end, that's what we're about, man. We're talking the old stuff and bringing back memories of the past when you just had a good time.
Wait, I thought we were a comic book show now. When Baker goods.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Superman when he wore underwear.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it just seemed right because Flair comes up almost every week. Hogan comes up quite a bit. We'll probably tackle him at some point. There's a lot of guys there, and your Harley Races, and these are the guys who, they were the cream of the crop for a reason, and we just thought it would be a good idea to shed a little more. Talk Flair and, some of his greatest achievements. And it's definitely fun. Researching the show is always the best part. As ridiculous as we are on the air, it's just fun to go back and watch these old videos and footage and just, always find a hidden gem that you forgot about. Like the Ricky Morton situation for me. I was like, wow, I want to go back and watch that.
Yeah. You, and you do. And literally... When you were going over it, it just brought back all the good memories of how wonderful that feud was. So,
yeah.
Definitely. Now, before we go, can I say something on a totally unrelated note just to make somebody really, really mad?
Oh, always.
Okay. I think that AJ Styles is so awful and overhyped. The last time I saw something coming out of Japan this overhyped and underperforming, it was on the discount rack at a Walmart. So to all you AJ Styles fans out there, I just got to say, I hope you are happy, because I watched him and Kevin Owens last night, and they literally bored me to the point where I fell asleep.
I have no idea who you're trolling, but I find it hilarious that we're using airtime to troll somebody randomly.
You know what? That should be the end of each show. The LAW Troll Fest. You got
troll.
Next week.
Okay, I'll troll somebody randomly next week, and it's going to be somebody that cuts me off in traffic or something stupid because it's me. But, yeah, let's troll somebody next week.
And we can even have a theme song. Keep trolling, trolling.
You do. You were in a mood to troll this week. Every time we were having a meet, we actually, believe it or not, we discussed this show before we go on the air. Literally every topic is like, this sucks. Let's do something about this sucking. I hate this. Let's do this. I want to do the worst of this. And this is lousy. Let's do the lousiest pay-per-views of all time. You were such a troll mood this week. It's surprising it took you 2 hours to get there.
My favorite comment of the week was, let's do Flash of the Pans. And I was like, yeah, I just watched Bobby Lashley. And he was just like, and then you were like, no.
Yeah, and we're not doing that. We are not. Bobby, that was the one and only Bobby Lashley mentioned on our show ever, probably. Sorry if you're listening, Bobby.
He probably is. What else has he got to do? He, you know, come on, he's working for a company that doesn't even pay for the plane ticket for the champion.
All right. We've already picked the troll of the week. We can't keep trolling TNA now.
That's right.
Get off the air.
Yeah. Well, let me read what I'm supposed to read and do it nice this time.
Don't want to get another inner office memo saying that these two idiot hosts on Friday night are killing the internet.
The LAW Retro Wrestling Hour is part of the Totally Driven Entertainment Network, a multimedia platform dedicated to bringing you total entertainment. Check us out at the web at www.totallydrivenentertainment.com for a complete list of upcoming shows and entertainment blogs and videos. You can also find us on all social media platforms, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and more. Don't forget to check out a few of our other dedicated weekly shows. Name at least 4 of these shows.
And yet he gives you the copy to read every week. Name it, Lee. Go ahead. Name 4 without looking.
You have Totally Driven Entertainment on Thursday nights.
I've heard that show. I used to be
Nick
on that
Wilkinson's
show. Now apparently they get real
on
people.
Sunday night.
Don't listen to it. It's terrible.
What, Nick Wilkinson?
No, I'm trolling because he was the one that got us in trouble last week.
No, he didn't. Actually, Nick is like one of the best ones on the site. Nick's the man. You know what?
If you
want to talk TV, let me give them a plug. Because if you want to talk TV with one of probably the most intelligent TV guys you'll ever and honestly, if you're looking for stuff to watch, just hit him up and say, Nick, this is what I'm into. What can I find good? I have never gotten a bad recommendation from him.
No, he absolutely knows his stuff, and he doesn't approach it from a fanboy perspective. He really, you know, digs into the heart of the stuff he watches and gives you the pros and cons of everything. And we're giving him a hard time, but the show is awesome. It's one of the longest running shows we've had.
And
the network has. He won't give me stock.
And it's got the Ben Stein of Totally Driven Entertainment on there. Jimmy Jannetty.
Another LAW original.
when he starts talking Doctor Who, it's literally one of the greatest things. He turns into this, like, Whovian, as he calls it.
He's a Whovian. There's nothing wrong with being a Whovian.
Yeah. Well, didn't Dr. Seuss invent those?
Yes, down in Whovianville.
Yeah, that's a... I mean, I don't get it.
That's who the Doctor really is. It's Seuss. It's the big reveal of the season, the show that they've never gotten to, is the real identity of the Doctor. His last name is Seuss. Yeah, it's Seuss.
Somewhere, Jannetty is driving, getting in his car and driving up to Florida to kick our butts now.
Now another guy on the network hates us.
And speaking of hating us, on Thursdays you can listen to Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira.
He hates us. I thought he was our buddy. What do we do to him?
He is, but you know.
We probably did something to him. We're sorry,
Mike. We insulted AJ. I think he's an AJ Styles fan.
Oh, all right. Then we're not sorry.
and for my fourth and final show,
giving us the second hour.
I think he regretted giving us the first hour. I say one night as a total surprise, we just call you in either Totally Driven Entertainment or Nick's show and just randomly talk about subject. We'll give our top five list of something that they're not even talking about, and just do what we do. We make Blog Talk Radio fun. But and you know what? I can go five, actually. Because on Thursday mornings, you can listen. No, I can go five shows. You told me I'm going to go four. I can go five, because on Thursday mornings, you can listen to the Coco and Wee Wee show. And right before us, every Friday night, is my man, Uncle Shawnee, who's he's an 80s man. And it's actually a great show. Always enjoyable. He's always opinionated. Another one of the shows that I really actually enjoy listening to. I always sign on before our show just to listen to it on, you know, and always enjoy it. So there you go. I got out five.
You did
five. They can't
be
disappointed in that.
See, we went above our quota. We are team players.
That's right. Now Nick's just going to yell at me for not sending him a recap.
That's your job. You're the host.
You know what? I'm going to send him a recap, but it's not going to be nothing we talked about.
Every reason.
Just because I'm going to force Bay to listen to the show. I'm going to just say we did a show with just
Batman and cannolis.
Exactly. The show was just us talking about Batman and cannolis. So. On that note, I am going to plug in the old PlayStation 4 and play some Disney Infinity. Got the Marvel Battlegrounds this week, so I'm looking forward to
a
fun-filled night of that. And I know you probably got a busy day, so you'll probably be hitting the old bedroom.
Oh, no, I'm going to go finish binge-watching Daredevil.
Ah, don't tell me about it. Did you watch any of them yet?
I've gotten through a few, yes.
How are they? Is it living up to the hype?
Oh, it's amazing. The fact that Punisher has the Punisher Mobile with the talking car to him, and, you know, the fact that they introduced Squirrel Girl, it's just phenomenal.
No, Squirrel Girl.
She steals the show.
Now, you do watch the Spider-Man cartoon, correct?
Yeah. Of course I do.
Do you find something wrong with them squirrels always spitting nuts at Spider-Man?
Actually, quite hilarious.
It's
like
every
time. A meta reason why, but it's one of those stupid writers.
It's just for no reason. He goes up with a squirrel and it spits a nut at him.
Right. It's one of those writer's room things, I guess, because I don't know if there's an inside reference to, like, the comics, but it's just something they said in the writer's room, and it's stuck. It's like one of them stupid things that we constantly do. And she keeps spitting nuts at them. They're like, let's just do it every time.
I just picture them sitting there going, what's the most insane character we can put on here and actually try and make her credible?
And they following. She's had four books this year.
Oh,
every
boy,
time they relaunch, she's part of it. Look, we are having a comic book show in the middle of our wrestling show. Actually, at the end of our wrestling show. It's the bonus show.
And we're talking TV, so Nick may call in angrily at us.
We've literally covered every show, and then we stole it from everybody.
Not yet. Hey, did you see any sports this week?
Hold on.
Basketball. All right, now we've officially stolen something from every show. Now we just got to get an old 70s actor from our childhood on here. I wonder if Donnie Most will come on our show.
Probably not.
Dude, he had not only Ralph Mel, but he had also had Potsy Weber.
We can't get any wrestlers on our show other than us. And they don't, we don't even count. You want Potsy. Potsy ain't calling us.
You don't know if Potsy could be a wrestling fan.
Which is why he wouldn't be calling us.
Oh, that's horrible. But I will say this. If you haven't heard any of them old interviews from the Totally Driven when they get some of the old stars on, I will give them credit because they do something that no one else does. They get them guys and they give them time. Like when they go on a show and they're plugging a book or something, Good Morning America, what they give them, 5-10 minutes? And Bay basically gives them carte blanche, you know, if they want to talk for 30 minutes. He had Cindy Williams on there one time, and the story, she had me her and Dawn Wells, Mary Ann from Gilligan's Island, literally had me glued to the radio. Because the stories they were telling, like Cindy Williams, with stories about John Mars and Ron Howard, and just the whole thing. You were just like, wow. So, there. Bay can't be mad at us now.
Not Pa, you just gave him all kinds of press. We have literally been on the air a half hour talking about how wonderful all this stuff is, and we didn't even make a lot of it up. It was real.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want a meatball sandwich.
He's not giving us meatball sandwiches.
You don't know that. Now that we've plugged, Bay may give us a meatball sandwich.
You think so? He wouldn't give me another show. He's not giving you a meatball sandwich. I'll just start my own show at the end of this one every week.
The Bay give us a meatball sandwich show?
We're going to start a show called Bay's Meatball Sandwich.
All right. So, for the last LAW Retro Wrestling Hour ever.
Right. It was nice being on the air with you all.
I am your
host.
I'll
be back. I'm getting thrown off the network for the second time.
And we will be starting our own network, probably slightly heard by slightly less people. It will be actually me and Matt broadcasting over CB radio.
They get mad when you do that. I tried to start a radio show on a CB radio once, and I got yelled at.
I know. They're like the most unfriendly people.
Right. You thought they'd be entertained with my constant jibber-jabber.
Well, I kept asking for somebody with a monkey to stop by the house. None of us travel with a monkey. No, because they claim that they didn't travel with a monkey.
That's not true. I saw BJ and the bear. They travel with monkeys.
Yeah, and Greg Evigan is very reliable as a source.
The show was based on a true story. That and Sheriff Lobo.
Don't get me started. I love Sheriff Lobo. Greatest theme song in the history of... You know what? I'm going to post the Sheriff Lobo theme song.
Absolutely.
On the page
that
I'm not allowed
song.
To mention.
We did our quota. I guess it's our stuff and you can quote it. I guess you can plug our stuff one more time.
All right. If you go to the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, you can see the Sheriff Lobo opening montage.
Why? Because we like you.
Yeah, and we like Sheriff Lobo.
We do like Sheriff Lobo. Can you make that our theme song next week?
Can I? You know what?
Will we get sued for that?
No. We're using old world class. Lobo died long before that. Oh, there you go. Can you hear that?
I can hear it.
All right, we're going to let this play us out tonight. Give our people the snappy goodbye.
Snappy goodbye, folks. Happy trails.
He's here, his moral standard. A man of dreams who guards our sins as if they were his.